My name's Michael. I'm a female alcoholic. Ooh, this room's crowded. I wasn't expecting it to be such a crowd. Thank you for having me, and we are doing a little workshop on emotional sobriety. And the letter Emotional Sobriety comes out of book Language of the Heart. This is large print because I am now pushing 70, and I need large print. So Language of the Heart, the book is a lot smaller than this, but it's the same color the new book is. And I think it's on, I have no idea, it's 2-something. Do any of you have the Language of the Heart with you? No? Okay, that's fine. It's called The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. This article is the substance of a letter Bill wrote to a close friend who also had troublesome depressions. And this is mostly about Bill's depression. I think that many oldsters who have put AA booze cure to severe but successful tests still find they often lack emotional sobriety. Now, this is written in 1958, and he's calling them oldsters. So how old is that? It's not really that old today. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA, the development of much more real maturity and balance, which is to say humility, in our relations with ourselves, with our fellows, and with God. Those adolescent urges so many of us have for top approval, perfect security, and perfect romance, urges quite appropriate to ages 17, prove to be impossible way of life when we are at the age of 47 and 57. People coming in today to Alcoholics Anonymous are more age appropriate. You know, they're coming in very young, and they are age appropriate. Back when AA first started, people were coming in a lot older and had those same feelings, you know, as the young people, but it was not age appropriate. Since AA began, I've taken immense wallops in all these areas because of my failure to grow up emotionally and spiritually. My God, how painful it is to keep demanding the impossible, and how very painful to discover finally that all along we had the cart before the horse. Then comes the final agony of seeing how awfully wrong we have been, but still finding ourselves unable to get off of the emotional merry-go-round. And in reading this, I was just taken by Bill's honesty. You know, here he is, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he is so honest in here about his immaturity and his character defects, and it just, in a lot of his writings, he really writes about himself, and it's not real pretty. How to translate a right mental conviction into a right emotional result, and so into easy, happy, and good living. Well, that's not only the neurotic's problem, it's the problem of life itself for all of us who have got to the point of real willingness to hew to right principles in all our affairs. Even then, as we hew away, what does that mean, hack away? We hack away or chop away. Excuse me. Even as we hew away, peace and joy may still elude us. That's literally how shall our unconscious, from which so many of our fears, compulsions, and phony aspirations still stream, be brought into line with what we actually believe now and want? How to convince our dumb, raging, and hidden Mr. Hyde becomes our main task. I've really come to believe that this can be achieved. I believe so because I begin to see many benighted ones, folks like you and me, commencing to get results. Last autumn's depression, having no really rational cause at all, almost took me to the cleaners. I began to be scared that I was in for another long chronic spell. Considering the grief I've had with depression, it wasn't a bright prospect. Bill suffered terrible depression. I mean, just terrible depression. And I don't know if any of you've ever noticed it, but when I read the big book, I can really feel God wrote the big book. I can feel everything in the big book. And when I read the 12 and 12, I can feel Bill's depression in the 12 steps, not in the 12 traditions. In fact, the 12 and 12 was written for the 12 traditions, not the 12 steps. But they were afraid nobody would buy it. So that's why they added the 12 steps. But I can feel Bill's depression in it. I don't know what he did different in writing it, but I can, it just, it's something that I can really feel. So he suffered terrible depression. I kept asking myself, why can't the 12 steps work to release depression? By the hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. It's better to comfort than to be comforted. Here was the formula, all right, but why didn't it work? Suddenly, I realized what the matter was. My basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence on people or circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionistic dreams and specifications, I had fought for them. And then defeat came, so did my depression. There was a chance of making the outgoing, there wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. Because I had over the years undergone a little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never before been so starkly revealed. Reinforced by the grace I could secure in prayer, I found I had to exert every ounce of will and action to cut off these faulty emotional dependencies upon people, upon AA, indeed, upon any set of circumstances whatsoever. When I first read this, and I read the part about the dependencies on AA, boy, my mind closed. I mean, just closed to the whole letter, because I felt my dependency on AA was crucial, you know, and it was crucial at that time. But he's talking about the dependency of where you're getting your prestige from AA. I mean, I'm the co-founder of AA, or, you know, that's where he got a lot of his prestige and his security. Then only could I be free to love as St. Francis had. Emotional and instinctual satisfaction I saw where really the extra... Sorry. Then only could I be free to love as St. Francis had. Emotional and instinctual satisfactions I saw were really an extra dividend of having love, offering love, and expressing a love appropriate to each relation of life. Plainly, I could not avail myself of God's love until I was able to offer it back to Him by loving others as He would have me. And I couldn't possibly do that as long as I was victimized by false dependencies. For my dependency meant demand, a demand for possession and control of people and conditions surrounding me. While those words, absolute dependency, may look like a gimmick, they were the ones that helped to trigger my release into my present degree of stability and quietness of mind. Qualities which I now trying to consolidate by offering love to others regardless of the return to me. This seems to be primary healing circuit, an outgoing love of God's creation and His people by means of which we avail ourselves of His love for us. It is most clear that the real current flow, the real current can't flow until our paralyzing dependencies are broken and broken at depth. Only then can we possibly have a glimmer of what adult love really is. Spiritual calculus, you say? Not a bit. Watch any AA of 6 months working with a new 12-step case. If that case says to devil with you, the 12-stepper only smiles and turns to another case. He doesn't feel frustrated or rejected. If his next case responds and in turn starts to give love and attention to other alcoholics yet gives none back to him, the sponsor is happy about it anyway. He still doesn't feel rejected. Instead, he rejoices that his one-time prospect is sober and happy. And if his next following case turns out in later time to be his best friend or romance, oh, Bill. Oh, no, Bill. Or romance, then the sponsor is most joyful, I bet. But he well knows that his happiness is a byproduct of the extra dividend of giving without any demand for return. You know, you guys hear that women work with women, men work with men, but that is nowhere in any of our literature. I don't know if any of you ever noticed that. It's not in our literature, but as we grow in this program, things happen that bring about some of these sayings, that, and we don't know where they come from. And this saying came from, there was a woman who desperately wanted to be sober, and there was a meeting not too far from her house, but her husband wouldn't let her go, because how would that make him look? You know, he didn't want the stigma of her being an alcoholic reflecting on him. But I don't know if it was an AA club or what, but the meeting was trying to help her get to the meeting. And this one gentleman, every day at noontime, would go pick her up, take her to the meeting, and then take her home. And this went on for quite a while. And I guess somewhere along the line, the husband got suspicious. And so one day when he went to pick up this lady, and this is all very on the up and up, it's just alcoholics trying to get alcoholics sober. The husband was hiding behind the bushes, and he shot and killed the 12-stepper that was picking up the woman. And that's when, where and when we started hearing men work with men, women work with women. That probably wouldn't have happened if a woman was picking her up. But at that time, there weren't a lot of women, you know. So anyway, that's where that saying came from. The first 6 months of my own sobriety, I worked hard with many alcoholics. Not a one responded, yet this work kept me sober. It wasn't a question of those alcoholics giving me anything. My stability came out of trying to give, not out of demanding that I receive. Thus, I think it can work with our emotional sobriety. If we examine every disturbance we have, great or small, we will find at the root of it, some unhealthy dependency and its consequence, unhealthy demand. Let us, with God's help, continually surrender these hobbling demands. Then we can be set free to live and love. We may then be able to 12-step ourselves and others into emotional sobriety. Of course, I haven't offered you a really new idea, only a gimmick that has started to unhook several of my own hexes at depth. Nowadays, my brain no longer races compulsively in either elation or grandiosity or depression. I have been given a quiet place in the bright sunshine. So this is a letter that Bill wrote about emotional sobriety, and I think emotional sobriety boils down to three steps, 6 and 7 and 12. And, excuse me, and when you're really living in those steps, it really helps your emotional sobriety. This workshop came from an Al-Anon workshop. And so I've got, they gave us, Polly and I have been doing this for about 20 years. But I've got both of these workshop sheets in here. And all of these character defects that Al-Anon talked about, they list the defect and then they say remedy. Polly and I immediately changed it to solution. So I just hope I stay on that one and don't go on to the other one. Okay. As the Big Book so clearly states, if we want AA Al-Anon way of life, we must become willing to go to any length to get it and be ready to take certain steps. To stop ourselves from drinking and stinking thinking, we recognize these are symptoms. We must get to the underlying causes of our physical addiction and mental obsessions. Most of us discover that a major cause of our living problems stem from emotional immaturity. We seem to be people who have no defenses against the onslaughts of misguided feelings. We tend to go to extremes in coping with emotional pain and discomfort. Usually, though, some kind of attempted escape. We become aware after coming to the program that the intoxicants we need to be aware of are not alcohol and drugs, but emotional intoxicants. Anger, self-pity, intolerance, resentment, jealousy, dishonesty, self-deception, criticism, fear, depression, and blame, to name a few. To achieve emotional sobriety, we need a couple of attributes: a willingness to change, and a power greater than ourselves that will provide the strength we need to change. We must recognize that the progress is an unending journey, and perfection an unreachable goal. And while we have a long way to go, we must make the journey. To stand still is to stagnate. The following are some of the quotations that set the mood as we begin our journey to emotional sobriety. I can be myself when I am in a situation I like. I can be myself when I'm in a situation I don't like. It says it's from Alcoholics Anonymous. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Page 58. Why should we assume the fault of our friend, wife or husband, mother, father or child because they sit around our hearth and are said to have the same blood? The power men possess to annoy me, I give them by weak curiosity. Emerson. The solutions rest with me. People can affect me only as I allow them to. I need not be influenced by others, for I am free to consult my own wishes and standards. With the help of my higher power, I can adorn my life with comfort, serenity, and enjoyment. It does not depend on any other person, and the sooner I accept this fact, the sooner I will be able to face myself realistically. A lot of this is out of Al-Anon. This is out of ODAT. If we desire to stop or at least diminish emotional slips, binges brought to the surface and aggravated by the problem of alcoholism, then we are ready to say to ourselves, half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask God's protection and care with complete abandon. When a drunk has a terrific hangover because he drank heavily yesterday, he cannot live well today. But there's another kind of hangover, which we all experience whether we are drinking or not. That is the emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. It requires an admission and correction of errors now. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Now that comes out of the 12 and 12. And this is what I believe. I have come across some things. One thing in the big book that has been worked out, this is in the 12 and 12, that I don't go along with. I do not agree with this. I believe once we're on a spiritual path, God does not want to lose one of us. So he comes to each one of us and he works for each one of us at our own level of understanding. And that's why what works for me might not work for you. What works for you might not work for me. But the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous is whatever the belief is, it will work within the 12 steps. Now, I have a higher power that I came to know through a tragedy, which I'll share about later probably, when my daughter was kidnapped from an AA dance. And what I came to know about God is that God is good, and good is God, and if it's not good, it's not of God. And I believe, for me, this is just for me, because if you believe you're disturbed is a spiritual axiom, that's fine, but I believe when something awful happens, God cries with me. When my heart is broken because my daughter was kidnapped and almost murdered, God cried with me. Nothing. God didn't do it. Man did it. And I don't think anything's wrong with me being disturbed over certain things that happen in the world. Yes, it disturbs me to see babies being abused. It disturbs me to see animals being abused. The war disturbs me. All kinds of things disturb me, but I believe they also disturb God. I believe I'm made in the image of God, and that's part of the image. That I believe that part of me is good, and this is just for me. I believe God is there right with me. So I'm always willing to learn something new. I'm always willing to be open to God revealing something new to me. If he someday reveals this, I'm sober 36 years, and I have not had a change in this feeling yet. But I am open to it. I am open to God revealing to me about the spiritual axiom. It just has not happened yet. I had that same feeling about a sentence in the big book. It wasn't in the first 164 pages. It was in a story, which is entirely different. But the third edition, it was 449. The fourth edition, it's 417. And that sentence says, absolutely nothing in God's world happens by mistake. Clancy says alcoholism is a disease of perception. I'm still an alcoholic. I still get in my disease of perception because I perceive that to mean that if nothing in God's world happens by mistake, then my daughter's kidnap was an act of God. And I wanted to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to leave God because I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt I didn't want any part of a God that could operate like that. And I've had several small spiritual experiences, and then a big, huge spiritual experience regarding that sentence. And Dr. Paul, who wrote that sentence, came into my life after my last big spiritual experience. We talked at lots of conventions together. He became my spiritual advisor. And what he told me about that sentence is that he didn't mean anything like that when he wrote that sentence. He was not thinking of man's inhumanity to man. He said, my spiritual experience was the best explanation he could think of as to why evil exists in this world. I'm really thankful I paid attention to something I read in the 12 and 12 under step 10. It said restraint of pen and tongue. Because when I found out this man was still alive, I used to think everybody in the big book was dead. When I found out this man was still alive, I cannot tell you how many times I sat down and started to write him a letter. Constructive criticism. Today I know it would have been a hate letter. You know, and I'd write it and then I'd tear it up and I'd throw it in the trash. So I never did send this. But after he came into my life, a lot of things he shared with me, but he used to get lots of letters about that sentence, all from people who suffered tragedies. It's great to say absolutely nothing in God's world happens by mistake if everything's great, but it's painful. And it's, you lose your trust in God when things are not great. And so he used to get lots of letters about that sentence. He'd get lots of phone calls about that sentence. And what he started doing is just giving them my phone number. Just what I needed, all of his. Finding ourselves locked into intoxicating grip of certain emotions and suffering the pain of mental hangovers from these, we find it necessary to learn which ones are poisonous and threatening to our emotional sobriety and serenity. We learn that we can avoid these emotions and their crippling effects if we can act our way into right thinking. And that's one thing that I heard when I first got to this program, because I tried to recover from my alcoholism in a church. And it was a church that believed in positive thinking and affirmations. And I really tried that way of recovering. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard a man at the podium say, if you're alcoholic, you cannot think your way into right actions. He said, if you're alcoholic, you have to act your way into right thinking. And I'm absolute proof of that, because I got really active in that church. I even became the secretary of that church. And I struggled reading those books because I could barely read. I did all that positive thinking and all those affirmations, and the only thing that resulted is I ended up having a torrid affair with this minister. Really upset his wife. And the one thing I thought I'd take to the grave with me as secretary of the church, it was my job to handle money. When I handled that money, I stole part of that money. And that was after a spiritual experience that drove me to the church. So I know for me, I have to act my way into right thinking. When I take the right actions, my thinking changes. We do this by saying to ourselves, if I were not jealous, depressed, etc., what would I be thinking, feeling, or doing? We step out on faith after asking God's guidance, and we try to remember, easy does it, but do it. The following list is by no means a complete register of emotional mischief makers. However, our recognition and treatment of these will certainly provide the strength, hope, and experience to overcome any others, one day at a time, sometimes one moment at a time. Okay, the first one we're going to talk about is anger, a deadly poison to sanity and serenity, a special punch to those who want to be God in their own lives. Its impact succeeds in obliterating reason and self-control. One can enjoy the human hurricane while plunged into the depths of this emotional intoxicant. Sometimes the debris left after this storm is staggering. Solution. If we take one whiff of anger, if just one whiff of anger sets up the compulsion to act on it, practice total abstinence. Should the compulsion get the upper hand, third and fifth step it, when sanity has returned. Strength to resist taking the first drink of anger comes from daily use of the 12 steps, slogans, and willingness to assume responsibility for one's own conduct. I'm a person who doesn't feel anger. I mean, just it's not a natural feeling for me. Like my husband, he's the most wonderful man in the world, but little things just set him off, you know. And it's not a normal feeling for me, so I've had two things in my life that have caused me that kind of anger. And one of them was my daughter being kidnapped. But the other one, I was really angry at my mom, and I was really angry at God. When I had 3 months of sobriety, my mom was in and out of AA, and she proved to me it didn't work. But it's a series of coincidences that got me into AA, because I would never have come here. She proved to me it didn't work. She hung around with sleazy AA men. There's not only sleazy AA men, there's sleazy AA women. They're in here just taking up space. They don't care about your anonymity. They don't care about the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. They're just in here trying to get the heat off. And those are the kind of people my mom hung out with. And so that just proved to me AA didn't work. That's a coincidence, a God coincidence, that got me into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. After I got 3 months of sobriety, my mom came back into Alcoholics Anonymous, and she got 4 years of sobriety. And it was amazing how our relationship healed. It was amazing everything that happened between us. It was really a beautiful thing. But my mom did not get a sponsor, and my mom did not work the steps. She did fellowships, and that was about it. At that time in Long Beach, they started giving classes for cable TV. And she was one of the very first cable TV producers in Long Beach. And she got a lot of awards for her first cable TV show. It was called High on Life. And it was all about recovery. And it was awesome. I never knew my mom had this kind of talent. And now she's hanging out with other producers, and she started drinking again. And she's still doing this High on Life. And I was angry. I was really angry at her. You know, what? I mean, she just made a mockery out of everything as far as I was concerned. And so she changed the name of her show from High on Life to Senior City. And it was hysterical. It was so funny. She just is amazing. I never knew my mom had these talents, but she got a lot of awards for this show also. But my mom got sick. She came down with cancer. She has notoriety in Long Beach for winning all these awards. But she came down with cancer, and she decided that she wanted to have her funeral before she died. Yeah, this is 23 years ago. This is my mom. She's such a character. And so my sister and I planned her funeral before she died, and we had it catered. And all of her friends came. Lots of people came. Lots of people involved with cable TV. Lots of people came. But the caterers notified the newspaper. And so the newspaper came with a photographer and a writer. And I got the paper the next morning. And that story was on the whole front page of the newspaper. It said, because we named it the Awake Wake. And so it said, Awake Wake. And then it talks about this woman having her funeral before she died. And they knew stuff. I don't know how they found out all this stuff about her drinking. And I was 13 years sober at the time, and my anonymity was broken. And I was not happy about that. But it was an amazing article. And so Associated Press picked it up. And when Associated Press picks it up, now it's all over the United States. I'm starting to get mad at God now. I mean, my mom's drinking. She thinks all this is great, all this attention, this newspaper article, now Associated Press. She's just happy as can be. She doesn't even know she's dying. And I'm getting mad at God. You know, she's drinking. Why are all these things happening? Okay, so now Associated Press picked it up. And all these talk shows started calling us, trying to get my mom on their show before she died. Okay, now I'm really mad. She decides that she wants to go on Maury Povich. And Maury Povich talked to my sister, and my sister's very normal. My sister's amazing. But they like drama. And my sister said, well, you might call my sister because she does cry easily. And so they called me. And at that time, I was working for musical theater industry. They were talking about me and my daughter going on the show with my mom. I don't fly. I don't like to fly, to go on TV. I was not interested in one bit, but it was my mom's last dying wish. So the four of us went. My sister was in the audience, and my daughter and I were on stage with my mom. And she was so drunk. She drank on top of morphine. I mean, it was awful. She was staggering and making an idiot out of herself before we went on the show. And the producer came up to me and he said, you know, your mom's a nut and your daughter's too shy. If there's one quiet second, you're going to have to fill in. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting madder. I'm madder at God. I'm just blaming it all on God. And it was the most amazing thing. When you put the camera on my mom, I mean, she was a different person. I mean, she was like so calm, so sophisticated, so amazing. I mean, I just sat there in shock looking at her. She was the same woman that was just staggering backstage. And so the show went off wonderful. It really went off wonderful. And my mom was asked to sing a song because at her party, she got up and she sang around all of her friends. She's saying, it's my party, I'll die if I want to, I'll die if I want to. You would too if it happened to you. And they would go, oh, Marilyn, God. So she stood up on Maury Povich, and she sang this song. And it's funny, after my mom died, oh, I'll tell you the rest that happened, why I'm still mad at God. Okay, so the show comes off wonderful. And Maury Povich says, Marilyn, our hero. And my mom kind of cozies up to him. She's kind of one of those women. She cozies up to him and she goes, oh, Maury, meeting you was such a privilege. I just wanted to gag. And so anyway, it went fine. It went fine. She was adorable, just adorable. And okay, now we've got CBS, NBC, other TV stations calling us trying to do a movie about her life before she dies. That's it. That's it. I've had it. You know, she's drinking and she's on top of morphine and, oh my God, I just can't believe this. And they asked Carol Burnett to do her part, play her. And Carol Burnett said yes. The way they wrote, they call it a treatment. The way they wrote the treatment, my sister and I were against because they made us enemies, my sister and I, in the treatment. And that's one thing that halted the whole thing. But Carol Burnett's writers rewrote the whole thing. And the whole thing was looking like it was going to come off. But what happened, that's Rodney King, whatever. That's right when Rodney King happened. And all these riots happened. And my mom lived for a few more months. But she did die. And when she died, this everything kind of faded out. So the movie was not made. But all kinds of people were using that. If it's my party, I'll die if I want to. Sister Sisters, a TV show, had a similar thing where someone's dying and she's walking around singing, "It's my party, I'll die if I want to." It was in a book, you know, where someone's singing, "It's my party, I'll die if I want to." And then there was a movie came out saying, "It's my party," and he goes around singing, and it was starring, I think his name was Robert, but it's, God, what is her name? Julia Roberts' brother played Eric Roberts. Yeah, he played the guy that was dying. It was a gay couple. And so he's going around singing this all, "It's my party, I'll die if I want to." And my sister and I thought, God, I wonder if we could have had that, you know, if we could have done something to make that ours and everyone wouldn't use it. But My anger at this, at my mom and at God, I had to do a lot of work. I had to do a lot of inventory, and I had to realize that, and it's probably going to come under intolerance too. You know, I was intolerant of drinking. You know, I was really intolerant of it. And my mom was having a good time. You know, she's dying, and she's having a good time, and she was happy for the first time in my life I ever saw her happy. You know, because we lived on the streets, she prostituted, she drank, we slept in cars. I mean, and all of a sudden she's got some kind of life and 15 minutes of fame. And how I could resent that, how could I resent that? And I had to do a lot of work on it. And I know the gift was really a gift for me, because what I have is I have a film of my mom, my sister, my daughter, and I, that I can look at any time and see the four of us, because we were very close and we were all raised the same. And I just feel like that's the gift. That's the gift. And I get to see all the beauty in it, and I get to see God working. And I know that God loves the drunk, whether they're drunk or sober. And my mom would not die. She was in a coma a long time. She was afraid of dying. She would hear me on the porch doing step work with people, and AA people would bring food over. And one of the last things she ever said to me was she never realized how selfish and self-centered she was. And I think she was afraid to die. And I went to a meeting really upset about it, and this man named Frank Honeycutt, who helped me get sober, he said, "Come on, let's go see her." Now, she's in a coma. And he went in there and he took her hand and he said, "Marilyn, you know God loves the drunk, whether they're drunk or sober. You can let go." And she died shortly after. So those are things that I've learned, and that who am I to sit there and be intolerant of things that make other people happy? Anyway, so that's dealing with anger. It was really a difficult one for me, because I would get angrier and angrier and angrier. And I really, when it says don't take one whiff of anger, because it just sets off the compulsion. The next one is intolerance. And there I was, intolerant of what was going on with my mom. I was intolerant of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was intolerant of people who didn't work the program. I was intolerant of all the different ways they do the steps. And I do a 10th step at night. And so I did a lot of work on that I truly, love and tolerance of others is our code. It's in step 10. And I truly feel that way today. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And there are lots of ways to work this program. My way isn't the right way. I don't believe there's a right and wrong way. You just need to work it to the best of your ability. There's all kinds of things calling back to basics, journey through the big book. I mean, there's all kinds of names and different ways of doing it. And I got sober with a group of alcoholics that came down from Dr. Bob. And so that's the way I do steps, and I love it. But it's not the only way to do steps. All these people have stayed sober. In fact, when the 12 and 12 came out, this is right when I came in. The 12 and 12 came out. Everybody thought it was to replace the big book. So that's how the big book kind of was obscured for a while. Everyone's trying to work the steps out of the 12 and 12. Have you ever tried to do an inventory of the 12 and 12? But people were somehow doing it, and they were staying sober. The Pacific group, Clancy's group, they had a 7-question inventory. I've got it here, too. I'm going to read it to you. And that was their inventory, 7 questions. I could be really judgmental on that one. That one. But you know what? That's the way my daughter got sober, was doing that 7-question inventory at that time. Now everybody's doing is back to the big book. Where is that? It's very interesting. The 7 questions are, in looking back over your life, what memories are still painful, are still guilty, are still dirty? Question 2, today, in what ways do you feel inadequate as a person? Question 3, who do you resent and why? Be as specific and nasty as necessary in order to be thorough. Question 4, what do you conceive to be your defects of character as you perceive them? Did I read that right? What do you conceive to be your defects of character as you perceive them? 5, what seems to be the problem that you have with people as a rule, family, friends, or whatever? 6, what are your goals as you see them today, whether realistic or not? 7, do you see any way that AA can help you begin to start towards any of these goals? That was their inventory, and everybody knows the Pacific group is the biggest group. It's just the biggest group. It's like, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. The first question is, in looking back over your life, what memories are still painful, are still guilty, are still dirty? And the second one is, today, in what way do you feel inadequate as a person? So, after my daughter lost her sobriety, after her being kidnapped and everything, she was in and out, in and out, in and out of AA. And she hooked up with somebody from the Pacific group that was sponsored by Clancy. And she did her inventory, 7 questions. And she recovered. So, who am I to judge? You know, different things work for different people. Did you have a question? 5. I'm not promoting these, you guys. I will repeat it, but I'm not promoting it because the big book is where it's all at. 5. What seems to be the problems that you have with people as a rule, family, friends, or whatever? Huh? Are we at 45 minutes? Okay. Well, that's a good place. Okay. So that was dealing with intolerance, different steps, different programs, different people. and the growth I've had over the years where I accept anything. Anything that works, anything that gets you sober. Okay, so we'll stop for right now and we'll pick up at self-pity.